European and North American beauty standards have been overwhelmingly white and thin for centuries, and fat phobia is ingrained in many of us from an early age.
Our next guest says that the ideas of who is considered to be beautiful and the rejection of larger, curvier women's bodies are deeply rooted in racism.
Sabrina Strings is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of California, Irvine. She's the author of Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. Sabrina, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be on with you.
So it seems like a lot of the issues that you deal with in your book have their roots in, and in quotes, race science promoted in the 18th century. Can you briefly explain what those theories were and what they were meant to justify?
Yes. So when we look at what was happening in the 18th century, people may be aware of the fact that this was the height of the slave trade, the transatlantic slave trade, that is. And in the beginning, in the early days of the slave trade, skin color was usually the measure that was utilized to determine who was slave and who was free. But over time, as you might imagine, due to interracial sex, skin color became sort of unmanageable as a mechanism for determining who should have the access to and privileges of freedom. And one of the things that they decided, that race scientists decided, was that they wanted to consider the behaviors and also the other physical features that would lead people to identify an individual as black. And within that conception, eating, which was considered one of the animal indulgences, and also fatness were deemed to be evidence of blackness.
And we see this a fair amount in some of the anxieties that show up in writings at the time. In your book, you write about this article that showed up. There's no author, but it was called Actually Starving. A prominent New York man dies inside of food. Can you talk about the way that this anxiety manifested itself in, you know, everyday conversation?
Yes. And actually, at that time in the late 19th century in the United States, there was this great terror that Americans were actually too slender. What happened was that the theories that were coming out of race science actually proved to be quite successful in convincing Europeans that in order to prove that they were part of the elite race, they needed to limit how much food they ate and then also maintain slender physiques. So that by the late 19th century in the United States, a lot of Americans were excessively slender. Dieting was a massive fad. And it wasn't until around the early 20th century when more medical doctors were getting involved with the issue, and they were trying to reform the American physique by getting women in particular to gain more weight. This is counterintuitive, given what we now think about the relationship between weight and health.
And in that vein, because this is such a broad topic and the roots of your work go back to the sort of pseudoscience of race science and how it has manifested itself to back then to health and today in health. When you first decided to look into this topic, what kind of reaction did you get?
That's a great question, because surprisingly, for me at least, people were very resistant to the very idea of my studying this. I was told that this work either could not be known, which is why no one else had written a book about it, that everything about the topic that could be known was known. As recently as 2013, a scholar in the field of public health at a prestigious university told me that my work was, quote, dangerous. So it's only been within the past 5 years that people have been interested in even thinking about the relationship between fat phobia and anti-blackness.
We're talking to Sabrina Strings right now. She's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of California, Irvine. She's the author of the book Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia. And we're talking about that intersection of race, of health, and history here. And, you know, again, your book goes really in depth. And I want to point out the story of Sara Bartman, and she, this story illustrates the intersection of this, the way the anxieties of the black body manifested themselves with white audiences. Can you tell us about her?
Absolutely. She was born in Cape Town, South Africa in the late 18th century. And at the time, that was a British colony. She was actually a slave, and her owner was a black man. He would take her to various ports where soldiers in infirmaries would be stationed, and she would perform little dances for them, almost like stripteases. And it was after she had been doing this for a time that a British entrepreneur saw her and thought, I can make a mint if I can only get her to Europe. So he bought her from her slaver, took her to first London and then Paris, and she was put on display specifically as a perfect specimen of Africanity. She was supposed to represent not only the iconic ideal of black femininity, but also the barbarity, the savagery of Africans because of her proportions. She had thick thighs, so-called protruding buttocks, fleshy stomach, and, you know, curvaceousness in general. And therefore, people believed that there was something about her largesse that bespoke a certain type of Africanness.
And what were the audience's reactions at the time? Because this, the story of Sarah Bartman has, you know, persisted until today.
That's right. And most of what we hear about her has to do, again, with her buttocks, or sometimes also conversations surrounding her genitalia, which were also prominently displayed. But at the time when she was on display there, for many in London and also in Paris, they had never actually seen a black woman. So we think about the way the transatlantic slave trade worked. They would take black people from Africa and then bring them to various colonies, but rarely did they actually make it to the European mainland. So when people came out to see her, many of them would have been appalled, sometimes because they expected to see a voluptuous woman and they saw one, sometimes because they expected to see a voluptuous woman and they did not see one. But I hope that you understand where I'm going with this, yeah. Which is that there was such a mythology surrounding her proportions that people either came and found that, oh, yes, indeed, she is just as big as they said, or they had this understanding of what she was going to look like that did not in any way match reality, and they were disappointed that she wasn't even bigger. So yes, for a lot of people in Europe at the time who had the opportunity to see her exhibition, they either had their racial ideas confirmed or were completely confused about why a quote slender Venus was being used to represent blackness.
We're talking about just now about how European, white Europeans reacted, but this was not just specific to Europe. We had this in America as well, largely because of our history with slavery, as we got into a little bit earlier. How did this progress once we got outside of the 19th century into the 20th century?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, in the 19th century in the United States, the racial discourse was actually quite powerful. And many Americans, many white Americans, did decide that they were going to take up dieting and also attempts to be slender as evidence of racial and also religious propriety. So that by the early 20th century, what we had was a number of doctors sort of puzzling over this whole question of why are so many Americans this slender? And an individual by the name of John Harvey Kellogg, who we remember now as a purveyor of fine breakfast cereals,
yep,
but was also a Seventh-day Adventist and a physician. And he thought it was very important for us to figure out how to get white American women to gain weight because they are the front line for the new generation. And therefore, we need to increase their strength, increase their vigor, and actually get them to eat more of the right foods so that they can gain enough flesh to reproduce the nation.
That reproduction of the nation, I think, is part of the anxiety that we hear a lot at this time. And I want to jump ahead because there was pushback among black women in the 60s. Can you talk about the Black is Beautiful movement and what they tried to address?
The interesting thing in my research was that a lot of the writing about blackness and fatness was actually being written by Europeans and for Europeans. As you might imagine, for a lot of the history of these writings, black people were enslaved and illiterate, and so they didn't really have access to these conversations. So when I looked into black newspapers, I found that there wasn't a whole lot of information about aesthetics and particularly about body size. And it wasn't until the 1960s and 1970s in which which there was this real movement to reclaim black features as beautiful, that we start to see now more black women and men trying to reframe what beauty can be for African Americans. And part of that conversation was to say that we actually do prize women who are more voluptuous and more curvaceous.
In closing, we have about a minute left. We've taken a big, long view at this. What do you want people to know today about how this keeps going?
I think it is important for people to be aware of the fact that fat phobia is actually not rooted in health concerns as it's commonly presented. Historically, it is rooted in race science and also Protestantism. And by knowing this, we can take a more compassionate approach to trying to address what are the factors that are contributing to poor health outcomes for fat people.
Sabrina, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a fascinating read.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Sabrina Strings is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of California, Irvine. She was with us to talk about her new book, Fearing the Black Body, The Racial Origins of Fat Phobia.